You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
It is Wednesday, July 18th. This is The Christian Commute. You're riding home with me, and it's 98 degrees outside. So it can't decide here in Georgia whether it wants to be 98 degrees and sunny or rainy and humid, but not quite 98. But I've got Studio B's air conditioner cranking. One day I hope to have a car that not only has butt warmers, but butt coolers. I rode in one once. I think it was a BMW. It was either a BMW or a Mercedes. It was owned by one of the partners at the accounting firm that I was working at which I was working, because you know I don't want to end a sentence in a preposition. And it was hot, and we went somewhere. Her name was Julie, and it had butt coolers, and it was awesome. Let's get right on into the show today. Today's show topic is copycat Christianity. Copycat Christianity. I've got a question in the inbox about Christian demeanor, and we've got the Bible chapter review as always. Oh, look at this. Here's today's terrible occurrence. Someone just pulled out from in front of me, or pulled out in front of me, and they've got a trailer behind their car, so now they're going to go slow. Why is there a policeman in the Seventh-day Adventist parking lot? This guy's turning left. That's right. He pulled out. Somebody pulled out in front of me with a trailer with a lawnmower. It's one of these obscene lawn care trucks. Have you seen these guys? The lawn care business. They have a giant truck, and then they have a big trailer with 50 mowers and weed eaters in it, and they take up all the parking spaces. So that's what I'm stuck behind going left now. That's the reason you're not hearing the Bible right now, is because some guy pulled out of the parking lot of a Baptist church. He just got through mowing the graveyard. So in some strange twist of irony, the guy who was mowing the yard at church is stopping you from hearing the Bible. All right, here we go. Today's Bible chapter review comes from Colossians chapter 3, verses 18 and 19. Tomorrow, Lord willing, we'll do verses 20 and 21. Verses 20 and 21 are about the relationships between parents and children in the church, and verses 18 and 19 are about the relationship between husbands and wives. And look at this. Somebody's halfway in my lane. Somebody came out of the sketch gas station and didn't get all the way in the other lane. Oh my gosh, the Christian commute. Such difficulty. I'd say nobody else in the podcast world faces such difficulty, but they do. I'll talk about that when I get to the Christian copycat show topic. Paul says, "Wives, be subject to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them." So where have we seen this before? Wives, submit to your husband as unto the Lord. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loves the church. Yes, we've seen this before. Is that in Ephesians or Galatians? I can't remember. So earlier in this same chapter, we saw Paul talking about what equates to the fruit of the Spirit from Galatians. And now we see the same kind of family advice. How does the family operate within the church? How does the Christian family operate? Well, wives are to be subject to their husbands. And this is fitting in the Lord. I don't know how the world does it, but in the church, what's fitting is for wives to be subject to your husbands. Here I got a guy from New York in the left lane in an electric blue Corolla going really slow, backing up traffic, and he's sitting there brushing his hair. Oh, my goodness. Am I going to be able to pass this guy? All right, here we go. This guy looks like some kind of foreigner. This is one of these things that's not racist to say, all right? Foreign people can't drive as well as American people can. And it's not about being white or black or brown. It's about I have observed that foreign people can't drive. So Yankees are already a foreigner to me because they're from the United States of America and not the Confederate States of America like me. And not only that, not only are they not Yankees, they're from some other different country. Like, they're real, legitimately, they're not even from America. All right, okay, here's another, get away, Yankee, come on, you were going to do it. You were going to do it. Here's another Yankee in front of me. This is some strange, colorful license plate, like Ohio. Ohio, good grief. All right, wives be, if Yankees be subject to Seth when you're driving, get out of the fast lane. Wives be subject to your husbands as is fitting to the Lord. Now, this subjection here means that they are following their husband's lead. We complementarians like to point out that the husband and the wife are equal, of equal value as human beings. Here's an easy way to put this. Is your child as equal of value to you, parent, as I pass? Here's a Pennsylvania Yankee going too slow. Ooh, it's a foreigner too. What's with all these foreign people? Maybe he's just real tan. Parents, do you see your children, male or female, as equal in the eyes of God and equal to society as you are? You would probably give up your lives for your children. You don't see them as lesser, but they are children, right? And you do expect them to obey you and be subject to you, right? Okay, so in the same way, wives are equal to their husbands and just as important, but they are to be subject to their husbands. Now, some feminist somewhere is screaming, "Are you saying women have the mind of a child?" Ah! I don't know, is that how feminists talk? I imagine feminist women talk like this, I suppose. And well, the problem with your analogy, Seth, is that you're saying that women basically have the mind of a child. Now, don't take the analogy too far. I'm just trying to give you an example of someone who's equal to somebody else in the eyes of God and yet subject to them, all right? So, as is fitting in the Lord. So if you have a covenant marriage within the Christian church, wife, be subject to your husband. Follow his lead. If there is an ultimate decision to be made and you guys can't agree, it's his decision. Be subject and follow him, all right? At the same time, husbands, love your wives, all right? That means you're putting her welfare in front of yours. Okay, so Christ loved the church by giving himself up for her. Husbands in the same way. That's loving your wife within the church context, is you give yourself up for her. It means when you go to Longhorn and there's only one piece of bread left, you give it to her. Okay, that's how it works. Okay, that's a terrible analogy because we're in America and Longhorn will give you as much bread as you want, but you guys get it. Do not be embittered against your wives, husbands. Marriage can be difficult, all right? And it's easy when you're a husband and you're going a certain way and you're making certain decisions and your wife doesn't necessarily agree with you, or she complains about something, or she does something that in some way holds your family back. Let's say your wife makes a bad decision. And I'm not talking about something like she makes a terrible dinner. But let's say your wife makes a decision that economically hurts your family. And then a few months later, after you've talked with her about it and said, you know, you made this economic decision, that was bad, here's where you went wrong, stop doing it. And then your wife makes the same bad decision or a similar bad decision. How do you view that? All right? Do you view it as she's holding me back Our family would be better if she would just straighten up and listen. Or our family would be better, but there's just something inferior about her that she can't get it right, and it's holding me back, it's holding me down. Is that the right attitude? No, because you get bitter against your wife, you get angry at her. That's not how a husband does. Because that's not how Jesus does the church, is it? You know, we constantly fall short. You don't look at your wife as someone who is supposed to live up to your expectations and just do everything perfectly and be perfect. You accept your wife for whoever she is, and you constantly try to build her up rather than placing blame on her and getting embittered against her and getting mad at her. You don't want to sit around stewing, being mad at your wife. That's not the loving thing to do. That's the opposite of the loving thing to do. It's like that Alabama song. She's been known to make her coffee too strong. She's close enough to perfect for me. It's like that. You treat your wife like she's close enough to perfect for you. We all know our wives aren't perfect. You hear these people, especially preachers, they get up there, my wife's a saint, she's perfect. No, she's not, you liar. Let me tell you something. Some of you who aren't married, you might not understand this. There is no one in the world who's going to get on your nerves and more and make you upset more than your spouse. I don't care if you're a woman or a man. Wives, nobody's going to make you madder than your husband. Husband, nobody's going to make you madder than your wives. This is something I've learned from experience. I remember getting really mad at my wife one day, and I was like, dang it, Mom! And I was like, oh, crap. But I realized why I said Mom instead of wife. And I've said Laura instead of Mom, talking to my mom before. Because there's an indispensable woman in my life. And this is what it's like to be so frustrated by this indispensable woman. So, like when you're, I'm sorry, people aren't going to like this analogy. When you're a little kid, and you're, or a teenager for that matter, and your mom is driving you crazy, it's just an indispensable woman. What are you going to do? When you're a husband and your wife is driving you crazy, she's an indispensable woman. What are you going to do? You're not going to get embittered about her or at her. You're going to respect her and love her. The worst thing you can do, guys, and I've had to learn this from experience, the worst thing you can do is show anger and disappointment towards your wife, because I promise you, your wife was not trying to make you angry or disappoint you. A woman can feel it when you're embittered against her. Get that out of your heart. And that goes back to thankfulness. Are you thankful that God has provided you a wife? Going back to Genesis, it is not proper, it's not suitable, it's not fitting for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. All right? You are incomplete as a human being until you got your wife, because she compliments you. And God has provided you a wife. Are you thankful for the wife God has provided you and thankful for your opportunity to lead her in a way that benefits her and your family? Or are you so self-centered that you're going to be embittered against her? Which is it? What's the Christian thing to do? No, you love your wives and you're not embittered against them. Right? And hopefully your wife is subject in the Lord. There's the old Rocky Johnson. Is it Rocky? No, Rocky Maivia phrase. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the wrestler. Know your role and shut your mouth. All right? There is nothing better than to know your role and shut your mouth when you're to be subject to somebody. Wives, listen, a nagging wife is a constant drip. Make your point. Support your point, and then tell your husband, this is how I feel, this is what I think we should do in this situation. Of course, it's up to you. Then shut your mouth and let him make your decision. Because listen, non-subjugation leads to the husband being embittered. And a husband being embittered leads to non-subjugation. So if a husband and wife will look to Christ and be thankful for one another and what Christ has given them and see the opportunity, I have the opportunity every day to show my wife the love of Christ. And my wife has the opportunity every day to show love to me like the church shows to Jesus. We wouldn't have as many divorces if people thought like that. People had what? What's Brookson done? There's a country song for all this, y'all. It's my belief that pride is the chief cause in the decline in the number of husbands and wives. That's a Brooks and Dunn song. So I've butchered an Alabama song and a Brooks and Dunn song for you on this Christian commute in one single Bible chapter review. Now, let's go to the, after I've sufficiently offended both men and women, now let me go to the question. Michael from Arizona writes in. Long time since Michael has written in. Michael's reading through Hebrews. Michael, he'll read through a book of the Bible and he'll share with me his Bible reading. He'll write two paragraphs and then ask a question. I'm like, Michael, you got to keep it short. So here, let me keep it short. All right, Michael wrote a bunch of stuff. Should pulpit and pen and the Christian commute, he's talking about me, consider how gentle, so me and the rest of the writers at pulpit and pen, should we consider how gentle we are or are not as Christians? Yes, absolutely. So, a little background context. Michael was reading through Hebrews 5, verses 1 through 3, when it was talking about the role of the high priest to stand before God and the people and then show the people who are ignorant, to show them gently in their ignorance how they were sinning and lead them back into a right relationship with God. That's how the high priest was supposed to operate. Obviously, none of us are the high priest. Jesus is the high priest, especially in the context of Hebrews. But forget about that. Are Christians supposed to be gentle? I don't care if you're a blogger or a podcaster or just some back row pew warmer. We're supposed to be gentle. That's a fruit of the Spirit. All right? So, Michael, that's kind of a really bad question. Should you consider how gentle you are? Yes, every Christian all the time in whatever they do should consider how gentle that they are. Now, with regards to criticism, which is basically 99.9% of what gets blogged at Pulpit and Pen, and a fair amount of what goes on at the Christian commute. Gentleness, who am I being not gentle with? Because I'm in my car by myself. There's a difference between speaking to a broad audience about a subject and going to some person and just berating them and going at them full force. Meekness ties into gentleness. You talk about strength under control. Gentleness is not withholding your opinion or your force, for lack of a better term. It's holding it back and not using too much. It's being under control. So in other words, Christians should not lose control. When you're angry, you tend to lose control, develop factions, and start being abusive to people. But when you're loving, even if something's upsetting you, you'll stay and try to be gentle. And I guess that goes back to what you're talking about, husbands and wives, and you're even in your disagreements, being gentle with one another. Now, Michael mentioned some people in his email that I've been critical of, and like Pulpit and Pen's been critical of, Danny Aiken, Russell Moore, J.D. Greer. Here's the thing. When you compare me or J.D. Hall or whoever else at Pulpit and Pen to J.D. Greer, or Danny Aiken, or Russell Moore, it's like, if it's a boxing match, it's like a 150-pound fighter going up against a 250-pound fighter. These are big boys. In other words, these are big money, big support, you know, Christian industrial complex giants. They make a lot of money, they have a lot of sycophants, they have a lot of backup, and they're not ignorant. They're very knowledgeable people. So when you talk about trying to correct people, man, I'm not trying to correct Danny Aiken. He knows better without me trying to correct him. So when it gets down to polemics, Michael, if I'm polemicizing this guy, these people, I'm polemicizing them to the general audience of the Christian community. So I'm going to say J.D. Greer is the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. He's got 6 satellite campuses. This is inappropriate. That's not how a Baptist should operate. He's all up into racial reconciliation. That's social gospel, not blood-bought gospel. You know, if I start into something like that, I'm talking to the audience, and I'm trying to get the audience to understand a problem and take action. If I go to J.D. Greer's office and talk to him about these things, I'm not going to bust through his door and say, your social gospel, you got all these unholy satellite churches, you Mick Church, Mega Man, what's wrong with you? You don't do things like that. You know, I would try to be more gentle with him. Again, like I'm going to get an audience with Mr. Big Shot. But when I'm talking about these big shots, we got to remember they're big shots. And they know what's going on. And they ought to be able to roll with the punches. So Michael, just short and sweet, yes, I should always consider how gentle I'm being, whether I'm hosting this podcast, writing a blog, or doing anything else in my whole life. But that doesn't just go for me, it goes for everyone else. I guess the case with me is that a lot of what I'm saying and doing is very public and widespread as a blogger and podcaster. So it may have, the more widespread your message is, arguably the bigger effect it has. So if I'm being not gentle, it's me being ungentle with more people. But again, I'm not talking to Danny Akin and Russell Moore. I'm talking to my podcast audience. I very highly doubt they listen to my podcast. But here's the thing, Michael. How do you gently warn against somebody in the Christian industrial complex? All right? You're going to be gentle with the poor person you're giving the warning to, but you're not going to hold back on what you're giving the warning about. So if I'm warning sheep about a wolf, and I'm not saying Danny Akin's a wolf, for example, but if I'm warning sheep about a wolf, I don't want to scream at them and get them all worried, and they don't know what's going on. No, I'm going to be hard with the wolf. The warning is, there's a wolf coming. He's ferocious. He's huge. You know, he's mangy. It's the nastiest wolf you ever saw. I'm not going to tell the sheep, hey, you know, there's a wolf coming. You know, no, he's soft and cuddly. No need to be afraid. So I'm not going to hold back on the message, the content of the message. But I'm like, it's in front of the wolf. Freak out. Because when you're the one giving the warning, you have to be calm. People are looking at the person who's warning, and if they're freaking out, they're going to freak out. All right? If the shepherd's freaking out, the sheep are freaking out. So when you're warning sheep about a wolf, you're going to use your shepherd's voice. Now, I'm not a pastor shepherd. Maybe that's a bad analogy. I'm just talking about wolves. So how gentle are you going to be to a wolf? Well, you're going to smack a wolf with a stick. But again, Danny Akin and Russell Moore aren't wolves. But point well taken, Michael. Be gentle always. All right, now let's move on. By the way, guys, keep those questions coming to the Christian Commute inbox, SethDunn88@gmail.com. Don't be like Michael and write a novella and give three-quarters of a page of your opinion on something, exegete a text, and then say, oh, what do you think? Well, I'm going to re-exegete your text now to everybody in the car with no notes. Okay, now, thank you, Michael. copycat Christianity. Here's where this show topic came from. I was on the computer yesterday, and Michelle Leslie, she's a blogger I follow, and she goes, I was so happy to be on the driving, or the theology-driven podcast. I said, theology-driven podcast? And I clicked, and there's this whole website, theology-driven, and it's this podcast, and I start clicking on the shows, and these guys are in the car talking about theology. And I turned to my wife and I said, these guys stole my gimmick. And I tweeted one of the hosts and he says, I've never heard of you. I was like, I don't guess they really stole it. Not that I mind. It's kind of funny. The radio was invented by Tesla and Marconi. Tesla didn't rip Marconi off and Marconi didn't rip Tesla off. These two guys just independently invented the radio. So for whatever reason, I don't know, these guys from Virginia started podcasting in the car. It's a little different from mine in that they ride together. And then there's a third co-host and they call him So they're having a phone conversation in the car, and that's what they do. I don't know why anyone would purposely podcast in the car. I do it because, as I've said before, this is the time in the day I have to do this. If I could sit down in my basement, shut the door, and have scripture on my monitors and play video clips and talk about them, that would be much better, but I don't have time for that. That's why I podcast in my car. But these guys are doing it on purpose. So, I tried to listen to it, but it's really bad. Here's what I think makes my podcast better than some, is I don't have a co-host who I joke back and forth with. One of the things that I hate about talk radio is there's three or four people, and they have a conversation, and they start laughing at each other's jokes, and they don't get onto the subject matter. And when you have a podcast, and here's what these guys are doing, they're with their friends. So they've got all their in jokes, and they're getting along with one another and laughing, and I'm just like, shut up and get to the subject matter. You're like James White talking about riding his bike. Get on with it. So I wanted to listen to them today to see how solid they were, but I listened 5 or 10 minutes. There's my used car salesman lingo again. Forthrightly, I just had to turn it off after 5 minutes or so because their banter was so inane. I was like, I wanted to listen to what your theology is. So maybe it's good. I didn't get to it. But it inspired this episode, the show topic title of Copycat Christianity. Not that they copied me, because I believe them, they didn't. Richard Haas, I've talked about it before. He does a podcast called Drive Time Apologetics. He writes at Pulpit and Pin Some. He's a guy I talk to quite often. So I'd have to ask Richard if he copied me or not. And I'd love it if everybody did a podcast in their car. If everybody spent their commute talking about Jesus, it'd be great. You know, it's great to me. It's not like I'm selling popsicles at a popsicle stand and another popsicle stand rolls up in the park across from me and is a competition. So why anybody else would want to podcast in the car, I don't know. But these guys copied me, even though they didn't, because they said they'd never heard of me. But anyway, have you guys noticed this in Christianity, that there are trends within church culture of somebody sees somebody do something and they think it's cool and they copy it? Here's one that comes to mind. The wild game dinner for the men's ministry. Who has either been to a wild game dinner, your church hosted a wild game dinner, or you know of a church in town that has a wild game dinner? And here's what happens. The men's group gets together and they're going to have a wild game dinner. So people bring things that they've hunted. They're going to bring venison, which is deer meat, for you people who don't know big words. Venison's not a big word. I say deer meat, but it's called venison. People bring deer meat. They'll bring quail, grouse, pheasant, anything you can, a bear, a wild hog, anything you hunt. And it's a wild game dinner. So instead of having a men's cookout where you go to Ingles and you get 50 hamburger patties and hot dogs, you have a wild game dinner, and that's the theme, and it's for the men, because, you know, somewhere maybe women go hunting. My mom never went hunting with me and my dad. I used to go hunting with my dad and my granddad all the time. So people are getting together, and I guess, like, wear your camo. I don't know. It's just something. There's nothing to do with Christianity at all. It's not inherently Christian to have a wild game dinner. It's just so random. And I think Paige Patterson was the one who invented this, because Paige Patterson was big into taxidermy, and he had a lot of trophy animals in his office gifted to him. And I don't know how many were his, but he liked it, so he started. And the idea of a wild game dinner is you get somebody like Phil Robertson to come and give a gospel presentation. So it's like, men come with your sons, sons come with your fathers, and you get all the guys together, and you're going to do something manly. That's the draw. The draw is doing something manly, like eating wild game. And then somebody gives a speech or a gospel presentation, and it's a church event. And I remember, I think Tabernacle Baptist had one a few years ago here in town, and that was the first one I ever heard of. But they didn't come up with it. I think it started in Texas. So some church in Texas starts wild game dinners, and then people start copying it, and now wild game dinners are a thing. And there's churches that every year, now we're going to have the wild game dinner in the men's ministry. Why? Who knows? Because somebody thought it was cool. So somebody saw some scheme or event that some church was doing and copied it. Here's another example. Love Loud. At First Baptist Church of Woodstock, this is a big, rich church. They give every Sunday school class, this happens every year, they give every Sunday school class money, like $1,000, $2,000. And the Sunday school class comes up with a project on their own. It's actually pretty neat. And the Sunday school class says, well, we know these poor people over here who need to have their house painted. Or there's a women's shelter over here that needs a new computer lab. They think of some way to help someone in the community. And the Sunday school class, they go out and they do this community service missions project. And they call it Love Loud. Well, Woodstock came up with it. And it wasn't a couple years after Woodstock started it that NAM started teaching Love Loud to churches. I went to a NAM conference, North American Mission Board conference. It was called the SEND conference, I think it was. It just so happened to be at First Baptist Church of Woodstock. This was, 7 or 8 years ago. And really what I learned is that a North American Mission Board conference is a trade show. There are a lot of speakers there talking about what they've discovered and their shtick or their spiel. So if I went to the missions conference, I would talk about, I'm the Christian commuter guy. I blog and then I podcast in my car, and here's a book about how to podcast in your car. It's out on the resource table. You can buy it, right? That's how it would go. Everybody's got their shtick. Everybody's got their thing that they've researched. And one of the breakout sessions there was Love Loud. So NAM had gotten the idea from First Baptist Woodstock, and they were teaching other churches how to do it. So other churches were copying First Baptist Woodstock. And we'll also see things like, there's some construction on the side road here. We'll also see things like a church carnival. Sports camp's a big one that's happened lately. My kids just went to a church sports camp. They had a lot of fun. But that seems like it's happened within the last 5 or 10 years. So some church somewhere decided to have a sports camp, and then they develop a sports camp program, and everybody starts doing a sports camp program. Carnival in the church parking lot. Some church one time decided, we're going to rent inflatables and make funnel cakes and have a carnival in the parking lot and give away a grill to get people to come, and then other churches started doing it. So what you get is somebody sees an idea that works. And how do they define what works? Well, they define what works, if they're Baptist, by numbers. Not that there's anything Baptist about that. That's just our culture. How many people did they draw, and how many people heard a gospel presentation, and supposedly how many people got saved? Or how many people supposedly got saved? So they look for things. So I want to ask you about your church. Does your church look to the Bible for its missions in the community and say, all right, we're supposed to be the hands and feet of Christ. I guess that means feeding people and clothing people. How can we feed and clothe the poor in our community? What are our specific needs? We're supposed to evangelize our community. How are we, what's the best way to go about evangelizing our community? Is it going door to door? Is it having an event? Is it having a wild game supper? But more and more what I see is the Mick church culture. If somebody comes up with a scalable model and franchises it to a bunch of copycats. And that has really gotten into church. There's a book called Franchising McChurch about how churches get corporate. Because it's one thing, copycat Christianity, it's one thing for somebody to say, hey, that guy's podcasting in his car, I can do that. Or, hey, they had a wild game dinner over there, that seems kind of neat, hey, I bet we can do that. It's one thing to look at what other churches are doing and start doing it. It's another thing to look at what the world is doing and start being like the world. We see this in like Christian t-shirts. The classic example is the t-shirt. It says God's Gym. It doesn't say Gold's Gym. It says God's Gym. And then it's got Philippians 4:13 on it. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Some out of context Bible verse. Or you'll see, you can Google this. There's a Stranger Things preaching series. Stranger Things from the Bible. I mean, there was a Game of Thrones-themed summer camp at a church in Florida 2 or 3 years ago. It was like Game of Thrones. That's so pagan. But you look, churches look at what's popular in the world and they try to copy the culture to kind of look like the culture to attract the culture. They do that with events and they also do it with a business model. And I've talked about the corporate business model and the CEO and the vision casting and the Starbucks stuff before. So what I want to ask you is, what is your church doing? Is your church doing copycat Christianity? And if so, is it copying other churches or is it copying the world? Is it copying McDonald's? And why can't you be creative on your own? Going back to the wild game dinner. What in the world? Where did that come from? And what happens, sadly, is that like people get in the business of being the wild game dinner speaker. Going back to the NAMM thing about how church conferences and mission conferences get to be a trade show and every speaker is selling a book at the resource table. So have you somehow gotten sucked into copycat Christianity in an unhealthy way? I'm not saying it's wrong to copy something. If you see something that's a good idea, copy it. That's being smart. If somebody else is doing something really good, like, oh, I'll do what they're doing, then I'll be doing really good too. I'm just saying, how much are you thinking about stuff like that? Are you being copycats? Now, I just saw, I see a Baptist on the side of the road. You know what that Baptist needs, y'all? That Baptist needs a copy of my book, The Cooperative Program on the Road to Serfdom. So I'm almost home. I'm going to end the show. Again, not a criticism, bad or good per se, just something to think about here on the Christian Commute. So thank you for listening to the Christian Commute today. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again tomorrow. Tomorrow being Thursday. Oh, I'm out of khaki pants. I've got to wash some. Oh, I got a whole thing going on in my house. Guys, thanks for listening. God bless. As always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to sethdunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.